The national security law is an incredible burden and actually a block to press freedom.
The final edition for a Hong Kong newspaper. It's Friday, June 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia urged to evacuate Afghans. Protecting pangolins. Japan unveils Olympic Village. Insurrection trauma. What do we really know about UFOs? It's all on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong's Apple Daily has printed its last edition, as national security law charges leveled against its founder and executives have forced the paper out of business. VOA's Jessica Dreet has details.
The end of an era. Hong Kong's Apple Daily printed its last edition Wednesday night, as supporters held up smartphone lights in solidarity outside the newspaper's offices. The closure comes 1 week after security forces raided Apple Daily's offices, froze company assets, and arrested five executives under the national security law. With founder Jimmy Lai already in jail, the fate of his pro-democracy paper is chilling Hong Kong's once vibrant media scene, journalists say.
We will worry about reporting subjects that are associated with the national security law, such as topics related to sanctions and independence. This will create a chilling effect. People may avoid reporting this sort of news.
Hong Kong authorities accuse Apple Daily of using journalism to endanger national security. And they dismiss Washington's criticism that the charges against Apple Daily are politically motivated.
And don't try to accuse the Hong Kong authorities for using the national security law as a tool to suppress the media or to stifle the freedom of expression. All those accusations made by the U.S. government, I'm afraid, are wrong.
Apple Daily says its style of journalism has been a thorn in the side for Hong Kong, resulting in years of pressure.
However, the legal system in Hong Kong had always protected us up until 2020, July 1st. The national security law is an incredible burden and actually a block for press freedom.
While Apple Daily's closure is described as a dark day for media, in the digital there is still some hope, says a political analyst.
But does it mean there's no free press in Hong Kong? Not necessarily. It's 2021 and it's a digital age. There are a lot of online news media emerging, such as Stan News and Citizen News, and there are other popular news accounts on Facebook, on Twitter.
But with one less newspaper in Hong Kong and journalists wary of crossing the national security law's red lines, many see a grim future for press freedom in the region. Jessica Dree, VOA News.
You'll find more on this and all the stories you hear on today's VOA Asia by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You'll also find us on Facebook and at the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. India's Modi to meet Kashmir leaders for the first time after altering region. U.S. puts trade restrictions on five Chinese companies over forced labor allegations. China to challenge Australia anti-dumping measures at WTO. Hong Kongers in the United States lament changes to island since 1997. Tech divide hampers COVID inoculation drive in India's rural areas. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by Instagram and Twitter and at the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Australia is being urged to agree to an immediate emergency evacuation of Afghans who worked for its military during the long conflict in Afghanistan. Australia, whose involvement began in October 2001, has said it is fast-tracking visas for former interpreters. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Campaigners this week released a list of the names of nine Afghans who worked for Australia during the conflict in Afghanistan and were allegedly murdered as traitors by the Taliban in reprisal attacks. This is despite a recent announcement the Taliban made, pledging they wouldn't retaliate against Afghans who worked with foreign groups. Islamic militants are attempting to retake control of Afghanistan as foreign forces leave. Interpreters played a key role during the conflict. Campaigners have said about 1,000 Afghans are still going through Australia's visa process, but they say it's taking too long. Stuart McCarthy, an ex-Australian soldier who was deployed to Afghanistan twice, has been an advocate for former Afghan interpreters and other staff. He says he believes the closure last month of the Australian embassy in Kabul has made it much harder for the interpreters to leave Afghanistan safely. He submitted an emergency evacuation plan to the Australian government. McCarthy told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation the rescue mission should be undertaken without delay.
It could still be conducted very rapidly, very effectively, and in my view, it would be a very good way for us to end our 20-year-long military commitment to Afghanistan. And in my view now, if we're not making these sort of decisions today or tomorrow, essentially what we'll be doing is allowing these civilians to be slaughtered by the Taliban, and our own government, including our Prime Minister, would have blood on their hands.
Senior foreign affairs officials in Canberra have conceded that locals who worked with the Australian military in Afghanistan are in danger. Australia's Immigration Minister Alex Hawke has tried to reassure Afghan interpreters waiting for a protection visa they were being given the highest priority in the humanitarian program. Hawke said 180 visas had been issued since April, but he wouldn't reveal how many applications were still being assessed because of operational and security reasons. Independent Senator Jackie Lambie told the Federal Senate that it was absolutely shameful to leave the interpreters without protection. The world, she said, is watching how we treat our mates. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a large-scale problem for a small, scaly animal. Happening now in Asia, former President Benigno Aquino III of the Philippines, who inherited the pro-democracy mantle from his iconic parents, helped topple dictator Fernando Marcos, and had troublesome ties with China, has died at the age of 61. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. A pangolin is a scaly mammal that is one of the most trafficked species in the world. It's highly sought after in southern China and Vietnam, as its scales are believed to have medicinal properties. Pangolin meat is also considered a delicacy. An estimated 100,000 pangolins are thought to be trafficked a year to China and Vietnam. Now, a private game reserve in South Africa is collaborating on a project to rescue trafficked pangolins. Romaine Jansen has the story from the southwest province of KwaZulu-Natal in this report narrated by Carol Gunsberg.
Ecological monitor Charlie Vos is trying to locate a pangolin.
Okay.
Holding an antenna, she is searching for a signal from a transmitter attached to the small, scaly mammal.
So she's right there for us.
This female pangolin is hunting an ant colony. Last October, she had been hunted, found in a car trunk in a police operation that saved her from likely illegal export. Pangolins are coveted in East Asia for their meat and especially for their scales, which are used in traditional medicines. This particular pangolin seems to be in good health.
Okay, so the sign for us of a healthy pangolin is that it's walking with its tail up and that it's not dragging the tail. It's also only walking on its two hind legs. You'll see it's only using the two front legs for digging and finding the ants and termites.
Pangolins seized by customs officials are treated at the Johannesburg Wildlife Veterinary Center, then sent to Finda, a private game reserve managed by luxury tour operator And Beyond. No pangolins had been seen locally for more than 40 years before the project began in 2019. Before the Finda project, four out of five rescued pangolins did not survive reintroduction, according to the Pangolin Working Group. So Finda ecologists carefully supervised the animals after their release.
Without human and veterinary intervention, pangolins that left the hospital in seemingly good health had underlying conditions because of the traumatic experience they had during the poaching. And if we weren't monitoring them as intensively as we were, we wouldn't have been able to pick up these issues, and those animals wouldn't have survived.
Monitoring requires a transmitter and GPS beacon. 14 pangolins at Finda had been fitted with tracking equipment. Two died, but a baby or pup was born last December, perhaps the first birth in the wild since the pangolin had disappeared from the area.
Pangolin are poached to make traditional medicine. I would love some other people, if they found any pangolin on the road or elsewhere, they can bring it to the right people.
The Finda Reserve and its partners aim to release enough pangolins to have a population that can be sustained and shared with surrounding reserves. For Romain Chanson in KwaZulu-Natal Province, South Africa, Carol Gunsberg, VOA News.
Asian Americans, veterans, and civilians in the United States and the Philippines are campaigning to name a Navy warship for a Filipino sailor who bravely rescued two crew members when their ship caught fire more than a century ago, earning him a prestigious and rare Medal of Honor, the nation's highest award for valor. Supporters say naming a ship for Telesforo Trinidad would honor not only the Asian American in the United States Navy, but tens of thousands of Filipino and Americans of Filipino descent who have served in the U.S. Navy since 1901, when the Philippines was a U.S. territory. Trinidad, who died in 1968 at age 77, was so eager to join the U.S. Navy that he stowed away on a lifeboat from his home island of Panay, from where his grandson says he went to the main island to enlist. In 1915, while on patrol on the USS San Diego, the elder Trinidad risked his life and suffered burns to rescue two crewmates when boilers exploded, killing nine. He received the Medal of Honor that year, at a time when the honor could be awarded for non-combat valor. The campaign has grassroots enthusiasm and support from Democratic Congress members who sent a letter last month to Thomas Harker, acting Secretary of the Navy. Traditionally, different types of ships have different naming conventions, but there are exceptions, said Samuel J. Cox, retired Rear Admiral and Director of the Navy History and Heritage Command, which suggests names and has previously submitted Trinidad's for consideration. The Secretary of the Navy has final authority and discretion to name and rename ships.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. A hardline Islamic cleric in Indonesia has been sentenced to 4 years in prison for lying about his COVID-19 test results. Indonesia, like many South Asian nations, is grappling with the rapid spread of COVID's Delta variant. You'll find this in all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. We get our first glimpse of the Tokyo Olympics athletes' village and venturing back outside for residents of India. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Ira Melman.
Tokyo 2020 organizers opened up the doors of the Olympic Village to the media this past week, showcasing virus upgrades, including a fever clinic just over a month before the Olympic Games begin. Warning posters urging antivirus measures, including room ventilation, have been placed throughout the mini-city, which can sleep 18,000 athletes and team members during the Olympics and 8,000 during the Paralympics. The mini-city has a little bit of everything, from playgrounds, gyms, to dry cleaners and ice baths for athletes and staff. Seiki Hashimoto, the Tokyo Olympic president, says the village is a great substitute for athletes that cannot experience the Japanese culture.
The view from the village is beautiful. It has a dining area where the athletes can relax, and the training area facilities relating to hospitality are great. For athletes who cannot enjoy the Japanese culture due to the coronavirus, I think the village provides them with a great space for relaxation.
However, the conditions will not be luxurious, with 9 square meters single rooms and double rooms at 12 square meters. The beds are made of recyclable cardboard, but are assured to withstand weightlifters and basketball players. Overseas spectators have been banned from the games, however. Local fans are allowed with strict limits in place. A few weeks ago, New Delhi's crematoriums were operating around the clock, dealing with COVID-19 victims. Now the Indian capital's shopping malls and markets are buzzing. However, doctors are worried that the heavily populated country is letting its guard down too soon, like in February, which led to a massive surge in coronavirus cases that nearly collapsed its healthcare system. Dr. Sandeep Buttarajah, the medical director for Max Healthcare, says the country is not in a safe position to reopen.
Because unless the country is vaccinated, over a billion people get vaccinated, there is no way we can ever think of the pandemic coming to an end or these waves not happening. In fact, if somebody asks me whether wave three will happen or wave, I actually laugh at it. Why will it not happen?
Public announcements are still being made to enforce social distancing and mask wearing. However, shoppers continue to crowd themselves in the open-air shopping area at Lajpat Nagar Market, which offers a variety of shops and restaurants. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
Now that you've heard Business Scene, be sure to visit us on Facebook and YouTube to see these stories. Making headlines in Asia, hundreds of Thai pro-democracy protesters gathered in the streets of Bangkok in defiance of a ban on public gatherings. The protesters called for the resignation of Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha and constitutional changes that would curb the influence of the country's powerful monarchy. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, images of the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol are seared into many Americans' minds and remain especially vivid for members of Congress who witnessed the riot. One congressman has been especially forthcoming about the mental trauma he has been experiencing for months after the riot. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti spoke with the lawmaker.
A surging rumble from the mob seeking to burst into the U.S. House chamber alerted Representative Dan Kildee to the danger he was in.
We were trapped. The crowd was surrounding the gallery doors, and there's no way to get from the gallery to the floor. The floor had been evacuated.
Kildee took these cell phone videos. One was aired at the impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump to show panic as rioters breached the Capitol, intending to interrupt the certification of Joe Biden's election victory. Listen for the gunshot.
Yeah.
That was a police officer fatally shooting a protester before she could get inside the chamber.
Take your pins off.
Pins off.
The gunshot cleared the way for an escape.
A tactical unit then moved into position, and that allowed, at least for a short period of time, for the hallway behind us to be secured, just enough time for us to get out.
After police secured the Capitol,
Senate will come to order.
Lawmakers of both parties expressed deep shock. A few days later, Kildee started experiencing post-traumatic stress.
I was suddenly very agitated. I was hyper alert. I was sensitive to every noise. I was very short-tempered.
The congressman sought help from psychiatrist Jim Gordon, author of the book Transforming Trauma. Dr. Gordon is counseling several members of Congress.
Anybody who's been through this experience is going to have residual effects from it, and that those effects are very much grounded in biology.
Dr. Gordon gets patients to talk about the events of January 6th. He tells them to shake their bodies and then teaches them what he terms soft belly breathing to lessen those biological symptoms.
Deep breaths in, deep breaths out, and just let your entire abdomen just relax. And do it for several minutes. Thoughts will come and go, and you just let them go.
To move forward, Dr. Gordon says Congress needs to adapt a culture of healing and authenticity.
What happens is that people pretend, and there's already too much pretense in our society and in Congress, without having to pretend that you're invulnerable, because none of us is invulnerable.
Gentleman from Michigan is recognized for 45 seconds.
Not easy for politicians who think they have to portray strength at all times. But Kildee has been open about his struggles.
Speaker's office in 4 minutes.
It's okay if you're a member of Congress or a police officer or anyone else, if you're a man, especially, it's okay to acknowledge that you are a human being.
Especially when your life is in danger. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News at the U.S. Capitol.
What do the Pentagon, the FBI, and other U.S. intelligence agencies know about UFOs? A forthcoming report is expected to draw few conclusions and raise many questions, especially about U.S. adversaries. Matt Dibble explains.
A much-anticipated report on UFOs is due to arrive in the U.S. Congress this week. Over 120 cases of what the military calls unidentified aerial phenomena are included. But no determination has yet been made about the origins of the mysterious craft, say officials briefed on the report and interviewed by the New York Times. The U.S. government's scrutiny of the phenomenon was prompted by U.S. Navy recordings showing unknown objects maneuvering in extraordinary ways. Luis Elizondo led the Pentagon's UFO investigation beginning in 2008.
These reports that were being taken by trained observers and some of America's most sophisticated platforms, these were real indeed objects, and they were in our controlled airspace, and we did not know what they were.
Lawmakers from both political parties say it is time to determine whether the objects pose a threat to the U.S. The report is expected to focus on whether the craft belonged to a U.S. adversary. Could Russia or China have developed what appears to be highly advanced technology? This is unlikely, says Marek von Rennenkampf, a defense analyst during the Obama administration.
China, we know, is struggling with basic jet engine technology. China relies on espionage to secure much of its advanced defense technology. Russia has a defense budget that is a fraction of the United States.
Given the limited information released so far, it's too soon to say whether the phenomena are a result of one nation's technological advances, say some experts.
What was splashed?
There could be explanations that don't require a great leap in technological capability. It's just something that we weren't expecting and something that we haven't seen before. If it ends up being something from China or Russia or another country, what it really would indicate is a failure of imagination on the part of our intelligence agencies.
The report has been 6 months in the making, incorporating evidence available for many years. Indications are that intelligence officials are still not ready to reveal any firm conclusions. While there is reportedly no evidence of extraterrestrials, they have not been ruled out either.
From what I've heard from folks in the government, that there's not enough time to compile a coherent report on this issue. We don't have the analysis that we really need. This is a long-term project. I think it's a right step.
Adding to the intrigue, China has its own program studying UFOs, according to a recent South China Morning Post article in which a researcher names the U.S. as a possible source of the objects. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
That's our program for today and for the week. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can continue online by following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Thanks so much for joining us, and we thank our service chief, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.